So let's turn next to consideration of draft advisory opinion 2010-20, the National Defense PAC. We have, I understand we have Dan Backer on behalf of the requester here with us, and please join us at the council's table. And we have Bill Powers from the Office of General Counsel to give a presentation, and I guess it's gone from good morning to good afternoon. And when you're ready, please proceed.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Before you today are three agenda documents and advisory opinion requests, 2010-20 from the National Defense PAC, or NDPAC. The request asks if NDPAC, a non-connected committee, may raise unlimited contributions from individuals, corporations, other political committees, and labor organizations for the purpose of making independent expenditures, so long as it uses a separate account. The request also asks whether it may pay for administrative and operating expenses from either account as it sees fit. Agenda documents 10-60 and 10-60B, which are labeled Draft A and Revised Draft A, respectively, both conclude that NDPAC may not engage in the requested activity. Agenda documents 10-60-A, which is labeled as Draft B, reaches a different result and concludes that NDPAC may engage in its requested activity with certain limitations. In this request, we received one comment on the request itself, urging the commission to not grant NDPAC's request. We also received comments on the drafts, urging the adoption of Draft B. We'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Discussion, excuse me, discussion or questions for requester. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be supporting revised Draft A in this matter, and just for public consumption, there's not a lot of distinction between Draft A and revised Draft A. There is a truncated answer as to question two to not get into the allocation question as deeply because it is not necessary given the answer on one. I believe this draft best applies the existing statutory and regulatory provisions in light of recent court decisions. And in my view, CalMed is the controlling Supreme Court precedent here. It confirms that the governmental interest in preventing corruption is implicated by committees that make contributions, and NDPAC is such a committee. And the distinction between NDPAC and some of the prior, the more recent previous requesters like Common Sense 10 and Club for Growth is critical in my analysis of this question. And I think there's lots of discussion about the expanding what CU means and what speech now means, but in my view, as we applied in the previous AOs of Common Sense and Club for Growth, apply to independent expenditure only committees. And I am not willing to expand that analysis and that conclusion in this advisory opinion, where we have a very distinct, a different kind of requester that makes both contributions and independent expenditures. As I was rereading CalMed, as this is the important case here, I noted that even Justice Blackmun, who clearly had a sort of skeptical concurrence and in that result, noted that and frankly predicted that in a case of an independent expenditure only operation, these concerns might not be raised, but also noted that where a political committee becomes essentially conduits for contributions to candidates and as such poses a perceived threat of actual potential corruption. So accordingly, I'm persuaded that the Act and the existing regulatory provisions as applied and upheld by the Supreme Court require the answer in Draft A as revised. And, Mr. Chairman, at the appropriate time, I'll be able to make a motion to move that draft.
Thank you. Commissioner McGann.
This one's not easy. Where to begin? I had spent a lot of time on this one thinking through and trying to come through the analysis to get to the conclusion Draft A reaches. And I had tried my own drafts on that front, and I couldn't get there. Because I actually went back and reread the case law. When you reread the case law, it's not as hard a question as I originally had thought. What is really at issue here are contribution limits. Contribution limits to candidates, that's the limit that matters, because that's where the corruption or appearance of corruption can occur. And the purpose of a contribution limit on a political committee that's not a campaign committee is to avoid circumvention of that limit, because someone could easily just give money to the candidate, then pass it through a political committee with that limit, and that would be something that would be illegal. But this requester, I think, realizes that and said, well, what we want to do is have two separate accounts. So we won't be just taking unlimited money and massaging it into campaign contributions. The limits are not going to be circumvented. They're going to have two separate accounts. And then I got hung up on the labeling. Because my one thought originally was, if you're a political committee, CalMed upheld limits on political committees that give contributions to candidates. This political committee is going to give contributions to candidates, so that kind of answers the question. If you take it at that kind of level, that's essentially the position that the commenter makes. He states these questions were answered by the U.S. Supreme Court and CalMed. Once I went back and reread CalMed, though, and its progeny, I respectfully disagree with that statement. I don't think CalMed went that far. On the contrary, CalMed expressly limited its holding, and it's not an easy case to read, because it's a four or five part opinion, and Justice Blackmun, who was the fifth vote for most of the opinion, did not join part three, which is really the meat of the opinion as to the limit, where he said he'll uphold the limit because of the giving contributions, but that's as far as I read him willing to go. So there were not five of nine Supreme Court justices to uphold the limit across the board. So to say that this is a political committee that makes contributions to candidates, therefore they're subject to a $5,000 limit on the money coming in, really doesn't get us to where we need to go, because that's not CalMed didn't go that far. If you don't believe me, the D.C. Circuit also says that in a case called Emily's List. Remarkably, the commenter does not reference Emily's List at all. And if I missed it, I apologize, but I've read the comment a bunch. And Draft A doesn't mention the Emily's List case. And this is FEC versus Emily's List, and it's a case the commission lost, and the D.C. Circuit had some things to say. But yet, it doesn't exist. And Emily's List really does answer this question that CalMed didn't reach. To me, political participants are not born political committees, right? That's sort of putting the cart before the horse. People decide what they're going to do, and then once they decide what they're going to do in politics, then they have to figure out, do they have to file reports with the government? Do they have to disclose? Are there contribution limits? What, you know, that sort of thing. But the notion of a political committee is not a pristine entity that is some sort of magic label that we can slap on something and then produce a contribution limit. The commission went down this road in MERS, most of which were due to around the 2004 election cycle, some were 2006, where in a way to limit independent spending, they tried to limit the money coming into an outside group by calling it a contribution limit. We've written before on that, how that was really just a spending limit. Remarkably, a lot of the language in Emily's List seemed to take the same position and read the case law the same way I had read it before. But to me, to say that there's a contribution limit on NDPAC's account that is going to be used to make independent expenditures is nothing more than a spending limit, and runs wholly counter to every case that's considered the issue. I have a few questions for the requester, but I'm not quite there yet, and I appreciate your patience and you being here. The difficulty with CalMed is illustrated really in Draft A, footnote 3, where it says, in CalMed, the Supreme Court concluded that the Act properly prevented such circumvention of contribution limits. There's a nice quote there, which is footnote 19, which of course is in part 3 of the opinion, which is only 4 Supreme Court justices. That's actually not the court. That's a plurality of the court. Maybe that causes some of my colleagues pause to vote for that draft because it's not an accurate statement of what the Supreme Court did. But the question I have is actually the sentence from which footnote 3 springs, where it says, moreover, and this is actually going to be the commenter, page 7 of revised draft A says, beginning line 15, moreover, IndyPAC's request to support all of its activity, including the making of contributions to candidates using unlimited contributions from individuals, other political committees, corporations, and labor organizations, would result in the subsidization of its contributions to candidates and political parties and is therefore directly at odds with the Act's goal of preventing the circumvention of valid contribution limits. I'm not sure that's the Act's goal. I think the contribution limits are the goal in and of itself to avoid corruption and appearance thereof, but I'm really teeing in on this, including the making of contributions to candidates using unlimited contributions for individuals, et cetera, et cetera. Two questions. First, I thought I saw somewhere in the correspondence between you and our counsel that you're not taking corporate money, or maybe you are. There was some question about that. If you could clarify that, I'd appreciate it. And two, I thought you were going to have a separate account with unlimited money, and you're not going to make contributions from that account. The only account you're going to use to make contributions is going to be limited with the money coming in. Yes.
Okay. To the first part, if our course of conduct is permitted, we would take corporate contributions, but okay, not organizations that are chartered by federal act and other prohibited forms of corporate organizations.
Okay.
And separately, all contributions solicited and accepted for the purpose of making independent expenditures without the contribution limits will be in a separate account, which will not be part of any contributions made directly to candidates, which will come from a completely different account, solicited and which has funds solicited and accepted for that purpose only.
So when this draft says your request to support all of your activity, including the making of contributions to candidates using unlimited contributions, that's just not true.
Not technically. I think it refers to the point that in our original request we'd ask that we be allowed to allocate the cost of administrative and operating expenses, rent, fax machines, etc., as we saw fit. We defer to the language in draft B, which says that we should use the Emily's List language of a reasonably appropriate measure to that the distribution of or the allocation of costs for administrative expenses be proportioned to what the activity is.
Okay. And that gets into sort of the notion of an overhead ratio. The commission has tried to do that through reg a couple times, both of which haven't ended well for different reasons. The second time was to try to simplify the problems than the first time, and then, well, that didn't end so well in court, proving no good deed goes unpunished. But we can't allow hard money contributions to be subsidized impermissibly with soft money, because that would frustrate the contribution limit, and that's why the draft I support does say you do need to, if you are going to try to share costs, you do have to split those costs on some form to ensure the contribution limits are not frustrated. But for me, this Emily's List answers this question because it does, and two, as a practical matter, are we really going to tell this requester, no, they can't take unlimited money simply because they're a political committee, as the commission has viewed that term, really under the sort of old school way of viewing political committee. We're kind of in a new world here, and you have the idea of a political committee that can take unlimited money. The commission's agreed that that's okay. The commission really didn't have a choice. The courts have said that. But now we're in a little bit different situation to some. But really, if you have a political committee with two accounts, it seems to address the concerns raised by the courts, meaning we can't just disregard the contribution limit statute because it separates the money, so there can't be circumvention. The idea of separate accounts within one political group is well established in the law. Party committees do it all the time. National parties used to have all kinds of accounts. Congress didn't like that, so they changed it. But that doesn't mean that structure it doesn't still have some value in illustrating separate accounts. Would this requester then have to set up a separate political committee to do independent expenditures? I'm assuming we would all say that's okay. I don't want to put words in others' mouths, but I'm assuming based upon previous AOs that would be okay. But is that really the result that we want here? Because now you have two separate committees. If they do want to do shared costs, that gets very complicated. That's really where I got hung up. I couldn't figure out how to do it. And secondly, when it comes to reporting, you're really going to have two separate reports from two supposedly separate committees, which are really the same folks, or one person, two people. I have no idea who really who supports this political committee, and I don't think that really matters for the legal analysis. But you're going to have two separate political committees filing two sets of reports. When certainly folks can pool their money and do IEs without putting a contribution limit on that. Why not let that go through the same political committee so long as they maintain the separate accounts? The draft I support has some detailed guidance on reporting. It's the sort of thing that would be nice to have in the reg book, but we have to do what we can because you do have to file reports. And it seems to me the public would be better served by letting it flow through one political committee, because it's all going to be on one report. If someone's coming to us and saying, we want a report, we want to be a political committee, we want to do this through a political committee, I think we ought to encourage that because it puts the reporting all in one place. The commenter doesn't really reach that issue, and it's something I thought of. It seems that the result urged by the commenter pushes the money into different places, pushes it into different reports, ends up being confusing, I think, certainly be confusing to me. So for me, once I thought this through, although I was intrigued by the notion that, well, it's a political committee, so we have to have a $5,000 limit because they give money to candidates. If they do the separate accounts, it becomes a distinction without a difference if it's within one political committee or two separate political committees. So then I landed on it should be in one political committee because that's the way to have the public have the information in one place, as opposed to have to find two different committees and figure out how they're associated or not associated, affiliated or not affiliated. That's a term of art. So for me, I land where I land because I don't think CalMed reaches the question. I think Emily's list did. I don't think we really have much of a choice in the matter, but we can't let the tail wag the dog. Political committees don't just happen. They're people wanting to do things, and then they decide, based upon what they're doing, what legal obligations they have with respect to reporting and that sort of thing. What a political committee is or isn't, I think we have to seriously consider long term and rethink some of the fundamental premises, because many of them have changed. Commissioner Walter, if he were here, would say we shouldn't do this in an AO, but these folks want to do ads today, and they want the protection of an AO. I think they have the protection of the case law, but as we know in past, that doesn't always give you protection until you get back to court. So you really don't want to deal with, the FEC enforcement process. The courts haven't been kind in their descriptions of that. So to me, this is not opening up something weird. It's a more pro-disclosure way of doing it, so long as they maintain the two separate accounts. Emily's list talks about accounts. They don't talk about separate political committees. And I hope we don't just get hung up on the labels. Political committee is a term of art. Account is not. But to me, in where we are today, it becomes a distinction without a difference. So for that reason, I can't support the draft A. I don't think it reflects current law, and I think it potentially makes a mess of the our reporting regime in a way that I don't think is anticipated. But so I hope maybe given the fact that there's a statement in there that doesn't really seem accurate, they're not going to make contributions from unlimited funds coming in, coupled with the fact that maybe the disclosure aspect would cause folks to rethink their position. But I can't support that draft. I support the other draft, draft B. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad that the requester understood draft A, even if my colleague didn't. I agree with everything that Commissioner Bowerly said. I believe that CalMed controls. Emily's list is a circuit court opinion. It contains a great deal of dicta. It concerned our allocation regulations, which is not what this requester is asking about. I had hoped that we could seek rehearing on bank and get very better clarity from the D.C. Circuit, since we had an opinion from two judges and one of from three judges, but one of them filed a concurring statement saying, you know, you two are like going all over the place. I don't know what you're doing. In any event, the D.C. Circuit cannot overrule the Supreme Court. The binding precedent is from the Supreme Court in CalMed. We didn't force these guys to be a political committee. They willingly and appropriately registered as a political committee with us some time ago. I haven't checked, but to the best of my knowledge, they've been complying with the disclosure regime in all that time. I assume that they're dutifully filing their reports and meeting their disclosure obligations. If they or anybody else sets up an independent-only expenditure committee, as the Speech Now Court seemed to anticipate, and as we talked about in a couple of other AOs, as I have stated before, and I didn't think my colleague disagreed with me on this, an independent expenditure-only committee should also register as a political committee, because they, by definition, are only engaged in making express advocacy communications, and I don't see how, you know, assuming that they raise or spend $1,000 to do that, I don't see what the conceivable argument would be that they wouldn't register. And, of course, we have rules on identifying political committees and making sure that their names accurately disclose who they are. So I don't think there'd be any confusion in the public as to whether who was supporting this independent committee should they choose to do that. Now, it's not for me to tell them what to do or whether they should do that. That's, of course, up to the requester. But what they've asked is, can they just set up separate bank accounts? That is not something that the courts have so far endorsed or mandated. And, you know, Speech Now speaks specifically to independent expenditure-only committees. CalMed, the critical Blackmun concurrence, which, and by the way, I did reread the entire opinion last night. You're not the only one who reads court cases, Commissioner. Justice Blackmun stressed that this analysis suggests that a different result would follow if 441AA1C were applied to contributions to a political committee established for the purpose of making independent expenditures. That's what he was fixated on. It's a line that I've heard you quote many times, so I know you're well familiar with it. You know, the law is changing in this area. Maybe this is the shape of things to come. Maybe at some point this will be where the law goes, but I don't think the law is there yet today. I don't think any courts have told us that we have to go there today. I think that, to the contrary, the courts have told us not to go here. They may change their minds in the future. And I'm personally not prepared to extend the principles from other court cases that concern different kinds of entities to what this requester is requesting. So I am on revised draft A with my colleague Vice Chair Bowerly, and I don't normally speak about other commissioners, particularly when they're not in the room, but since you have said that you thought Commissioner Walther would probably say we can't answer this, we have to issue a regulation, my conversations with him indicate that he was fully prepared to say no today. So I didn't want to leave that misperception out there that maybe there was some other alternative that has not been put forward to the public in the form of a draft that any commissioner has, at least so far, voiced support for.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think it's I certainly was not trying to guess where Commissioner Walther would be. I don't think it's a misperception. He had, in a previous AO, in a similar topic, had indicated that he thought rulemaking was the way to go, and that position certainly has some merit, but we're confronted with folks here today. To say that Emily's list only concerned overhead ratio and that's not what we have here today, I think is just not accurate, because it really is the flip side of the same coin, because at the end of the day it's imposing a contribution limit on spending that is not something that we can that we can regulate. Because in Emily's list, the issue was this overhead ratio, where the FEC mandated that any sort of shared costs had to be picked up with at least 50% hard money, and the Emily's list court said that goes too far, because you're essentially imposing a hard money requirement on activity that for which there is no basis to impose a hard money requirement. That is precisely the same thing Draft A does here, where you're essentially imposing a hard money requirement on activity that, that every court that's looked at this says is not something that we can impose such a hard money requirement on. To sort of poo-poo Emily's list and say there was this concurrence that sort of, you know, said the majority didn't know what they were doing and all this, that's simply not true. I mean, the Emily's list opinion certainly has all kinds of things in there, all of which I think are necessary to reach the result. And we don't need to really re-debate Emily's list unless someone wants to. I'm certainly willing to do that. But you know, not only did Emily's list say constitutional problems, but that the FEC was going beyond its statutory authority, and all three judges agreed with that. And that was really the point of the concurrence, was that the majority really didn't have to reach the constitutional issue. Of course, to avoid the constitutional issue under DiBartolo and its progeny, you have to reach it and then read the statute to avoid it. But that's why the majority opinion, I think, was sound in that respect. But all the concurrence was doing was saying that the FEC was beyond its statutory ground to try to impose what was essentially a limit on spending that the FEC had no business imposing such a limit upon. And reading that concurrence, I mean, it really is, it's deja vu all over again, right? Quoting the concurrence, by the plain language of the Federal Election Campaign Act, the FEC lacks the power it now asserts. Seems like that applies here as well. Here, the FEC has set aside Congress's command that the agency's jurisdiction be bounded by the quote-unquote purpose for which the money is spent. That's a critical phrase, because here the money in question is going to be spent on independent expenditures. We know that doesn't have a limit on the spending side. We now know that that's not limited on the contribution side. But I guess we don't, because now it seems like we are going to impose a contribution limit on that. If one were to make the argument that in order to ensure that the contribution limit to candidates is not circumvented, and or there will not be corruption or the appearance there, or there will be corruption or appearance thereof if we don't impose a limit on the PAC. I can hear that argument. That makes some sense to me. I think it goes too far, but that's at least an issue that I think folks can debate. Meaning, because they don't have a limit, maybe there's a perception that there's extra help here, or there'll be an appearance. Citizens United Court really rejected that sort of access and appearance kind of thing. It really has to be a much tighter fit. The other part of the concurrence in Emily's list had a lot of rhetoric basically saying how McConnell was wrong and, quote, McConnell's careless invocation of access and influence are synonyms for corruption is instructive. Of course, that's been the way I read Citizens United, let's say, clarified. But if we were having a debate over the justification for the limit, and I think we have to, because when the courts limit the reach of a statute, we have to be mindful of that, and we have to realize why where the limitation is, and it's going to be driven by the basis for the statute, which is corruption or appearance thereof. And if I could see if we're having a discussion over whether or not unlimited money into the same political committee causes a problem. We're not having that discussion. We're citing CalMed for the proposition that this is an open and shut case, citing a plurality, not the majority. There's not a lot of room here to really have a meaningful discussion on where we're going. And my concern is for the future. I thought when these cases came down, we could wipe the slate clean and readjust our first principles and really get into the nitty gritty of a lot of these new issues. But if this is where we are, this doesn't really bode well for the future, because essentially we're saying Emily's list doesn't exist. It does. It's Emily's List versus Federal Election Commission's D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. We're in the D.C. Circuit. We lost the case. Some may not like the case, but it's a case and it's binding on the agency. And if we don't recognize it as having some sort of effect on what we do, we're in for a long haul down the road on how we're gonna craft. Modify, craft, repeal, and otherwise clean up current regs that are affected by recent case law. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just to move this along, I support draft B. I don't think that CalMed directly speaks to the scenario that's set forth by the requester in this situation. I do think that the Emily's List case does, and talking about how describing an entity just like the ND PAC as a when it discusses hybrid nonprofit entities and their ability to establish both hard money and soft money accounts, I think that that speaks directly to the request, and as a result, I think that that the structure that that requester would like to put in place, where there would be both a hard money account that would be fully subject to the limits, prohibitions, and reporting requirements of the Act, and then have a separate account that out of which the PAC would only be making independent expenditures. I think that that is, again, not only consistent with Emily's List, but it certainly is consistent, I think, with recent precedent that we've been seeing along this line in Citizens United and in Speech Now. So I'm prepared to support Draft B, and any further discussion? If none, do we have a motion? Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move adoption of Agenda Document 10-60B, which is revised Draft A in Advisory Opinion 10-20 National Defense PAC.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? No. No. The motion fails by a vote of 2-3 with Commissioner Weintraub and the Vice Chair in favor, and Commissioners McGann, Hunter, and myself opposed. Do we have a further motion? Commissioner Hunter.
I move adoption of Agenda Document 10-60-A, which is Draft B of this advisory opinion. Thank you.
Okay. All those in favor of this motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
The motion fails by a vote of 3-2 with Commissioners McGann, Hunter, and myself in favor, and Commissioners Weintraub and the Vice Chair opposed. At this point, would instruct counsel to send the appropriate letter to requester indicating that the commission could not answer this, provide them an answer to their request. Mr. Backer, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
We will.